hardened in our ideological bunkers, far too many Americans have become accustomed to reacting to any tragic event by blaming their favorite scapegoat, whatever that may be, for a given person. Such was the case with the brutal murder of 10 mostly African-American grocery shoppers in Buffalo, New York, on May 14th. Unthinking finger-pointing gets us exactly nowhere. But it is a lazy way to avoid all responsibility, complacently shrugging if only those people would do something, we wouldn't have these problems. Author Jeff Charlotte tends to do it the hard way. After this shooting, he read through the entire 180-page manifesto posted online by the 18-year-old suspect. And only then did he draw some educated but deeply disturbing conclusions in a Vanity Fair column, conclusions which we are fortunate that he's agreed to share with us today. Jeff, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Hi, Welton. It's good to be with you. Sorry it's under such horrible circumstances.
Same. The article is headlined, "The Terrifying Familiarity of the Buffalo Shooting Suspect's Extremist Screed." Why should this be familiar by now?
I mean, as long as there have been mass killers, there's been manifestos, and we can go back to Mein Kampf or earlier. But this particular manifesto, much of which is lifted directly from the manifesto used by a man named Breton Tarrant, who killed a huge number of people in a New Zealand mosque in Christchurch in 2019. Much of it is lifted, not so much as plagiarism, but as sort of tribute to that manifesto, which he attributes. And in turn, that manifesto borrows heavily from the 2011 manifesto of the Oslo murderer, Anders Breivik, who killed close to 100 people in 2011. And all these manifestos, in fact, are in turn borrowing also from the manifesto of Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, whose manifesto was published in the Washington Post as part of his demand, his full giant manifesto, in an attempt to stop the bombing. So these manifestos are repeating themselves, each one adding on to the last, and not quite duplicates. It's a little bit like a chain letter adding on to the last. But this message is being broadcast repeatedly and louder and louder. And instead of dismissing it as aberration, it's time for us to recognize the signal and to push back.
Jeff, you open your article with a chilling scene that played out just hours after the Buffalo massacre. Would you describe that scene, please, and talk about its significance?
So the rock star Ted Nugent, younger listeners will thankfully not know him. Most famous for a song called Cat Scratch Fever, has since become a extreme far right activist. I think it's fair to accurately call him, with no hyperbole, a fascist. Was opening for Donald Trump and Trump Jr. on Saturday night in Austin, Texas, and told the crowd, "I love you. I love you people madly, but I'd love you more if you went forward and just went berserk on the skulls of the Democrats and the Marxists and the communists. I'd love you more if you went forward and just went berserk on the skulls." This is a direct call for violence. This isn't a rhetorical move. And what it means to me, I think, is that what we're really seeing is the far right, which is always complaining about the idea of open borders, has embraced open borders between rhetoric and action. It's increasingly hard to draw the line. I'm not saying that Ted Nugent's responsible for what happened earlier in the day. I am saying that if someone who heard him say that now goes and acts on his words. Yeah. Yeah. I think if you call for violence and people commit violence, you bear responsibility. Yeah.
A lot of more liberal commentators have honed in on Tucker Carlson of Fox News in their finger pointing. Why is that an easy way out? And why, as you write in your article, is it wrong?
We make the mistake when we focus on Tucker Carlson as the bad apple. And this idea that if we could just get Tucker Carlson off the air, this would go away. Mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson isn't leading his audience. His audience is leading him. He's embracing replacement theory because his audience has. This stuff, you can get it from anywhere. And the same throughout all his material. I tried to trace his manifesto to its various sources, including there's some Nazi sources in there. There's Ted Kaczynski is plagiarized. There's various other sources. The 30 pages dedicated to anti-Semitic memes, I couldn't trace because they're so widespread. In fact, one whole page could be taken directly, I hate to say this, from the once great writer Alice Walker, who has now embraced virulent anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. This stuff is out there mm-hmm. now. Tucker Carlson is giving voice to it. He's not inventing it. And mm-hmm. I think there's a risk that we sort of imagine that we can contain it in this one bad actor.
Jeff, it's been a couple of years now since you said something actually on this show that has stayed with me. To paraphrase, you worried out loud that the extreme right-wing fringe in this country had become mainstream. Yeah. And you write something similar in this piece, quote-unquote, fringe racist beliefs have moved to the center, and we can no longer afford the luxury of looking away. You also shocked me with the statistic that a third of Americans may support the great replacement theory.
Yeah, that figure, a third of Americans, comes from a very broad survey Associated Press did last week. And if anything, I'm guessing that's probably low. But in terms of this question of the mainstream, I look, for instance, at NPR and their coverage. They actually published a piece about why they were not going to call this the manifesto, because to do so would to take these ideas seriously. And I think there's a conflation there of seriously and with respect. I have no respect for these ideas, but I take them, as we all should, incredibly seriously. They just led to 10 deaths in Buffalo and three more. But look at the number of leading right-wing figures who have, instead of just rushing to utterly denounce this, have looked for ways to distance themselves. If you go on Twitter, you'll find a whole world of glee ranging from celebration of these killings to the idea that the killings were actually the work of leftists, the same lie that they used for January 6th. It was actually Antifa that did this. We can't marginalize this because it's not marginal. If we're going to talk about Tucker Carlson, then let's talk about the fact that Tucker Carlson has the number one rated show in, I believe, in cable news history, that the various right-wing sources that are promoting this material wildly outstrip New York Times, Washington Post. There's an imagination amongst, especially, I hate to say it, educated liberals like myself, that we're still the center. At the very least, the other major party in the United States, the Republicans, are now the party of great replacement theory. These are not fringe ideas. This is the platform. Yeah.
You use the term genealogies of fascism and describe each new extremist manifesto building on previous ones. How does that work?
I mean, you look at the Christchurch Manifesto, which this killer took in large, he took it as a template. He used it as a template in the same way the Christchurch Manifesto was modeled explicitly after the Oslo Manifesto, right? Each one. But then they refine it to their own obsessions. So The Buffalo Killer is not concerned with Muslims as those two previous ones were. He considers them bad and they should not be in America, but he's not, they're not, that's not his project. He actually did a find and replace of the word Muslim and replaced it with black. And that becomes his obsession. The other change that you see that hasn't been in these previous manifestos, and I think reflects a lot of what's happening in because of QAnon right now, is anti-Semitism that was always sort of simmering is now starting to take a central place. Yeah. And whereas those previous manifestos at best sort of mentioned Jews on the side, that is the Buffalo Killer's main concern. He says the real war is between Gentile and Jew. He resurrects an old racist American idea that the only reason blacks are a problem is because they are doing the bidding of the secret Jewish masterminds, which serves this right-wing idea. If you have this idea of white supremacy, how can you really accept that non-white people could possibly cause you troubles? They can't be your equal. Well, you need a non-human mastermind figure. And Jews are the only ones that he calls for total extermination of. Mm-hmm. He says, look, blacks, fine, they can go back to Africa. We'll kill them here if they don't, but then go back to Africa. But Jews, we must hunt them down and kill them everywhere and not leave one. That's new. That's horrible. And when you say, oh, well, this guy is just an extremist, then you look at these memes. And I've seen many of these memes before. People tweet them at me. Right wingers tweet them at me. It's become the Groyper movement with which many elected officials, now congressmen, are associated, embraces these memes. Yeah. That's the expansion, the newness, the horribleness.
If we fail to recognize how deep this goes, we will continue to flail at the symptoms but never get at the disease. I'm at a loss, however, for how to address this in a democratic society. You name Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller as adherents to the Great Replacement Theory, and the current anti-gay propaganda of groomers and pedas that seems a sure ticket to GOP electoral success.
Yeah. I mean, I look at the fact that the leading Republican nominee or leading front runner for the nomination for governor in four key states, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin, are all people who are running on a platform that not only do they reject the 2020 election, they'll reject the 2024 election. So I look at this as it would only take a couple of them to win, to, in fact, do that job, right? So I think, what can we do? I mean, I'm not a strategist, but I am a writer. I'm a journalist. And one thing we can do is we can start naming the problem correctly. We can stop saying, oh, let's try. And I mean, we've been saying this for years now. So let's finally do it. Let's hold off lest that problem become bigger. The fight is here. It's here. Everybody in Buffalo knows that. Everybody, everybody should know that now. There's no placating these folks. There's no pretending otherwise. There's no saying, let's, not take these ideas seriously. I think we've got to get rid of a lot of euphemistic language. We've got to stop saying election denier. That's a euphemism. We have to say coup plotter. That's what those people were, right? Election denier means like, that person doesn't get it. They don't quite agree, or they're a little bit nuts. We've got to stop taking solace in the idea of lunacy on the right. Lunatic or not, it's huge. We have to stop taking solace in the fact that they are a minority, and they are. Mm-hmm. Well, don't worry. Ultimately, we're 70% of the country. It takes less than 30% to throw a country into terrible discord.
Yeah.
And so I think those are our steps. Let's name the problem. Mm.
Jeff, you know better than almost anyone how religion gets used to organize, promote, and then deny culpability in cases like this. Would you talk about that and how it could instead be used to oppose deadly violence like this?
You know, first of all, we have to start to recognize this as a rootist project. And there we had the old problem of a lot of reporters sort of siloing religion elsewhere. This was a Christian nationalist project. Explicitly a Christian nationalist project. Now, some people say, well, no, he says he's not a Christian. That's true. He does. But he says, I'm not a Christian, and yet I live by Christian values, and I must do so because to be white is to be Christian. And that I can't think of a plainer statement of Christian nationalism and white supremacy than that. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether you believe that Christian, it's the idea of Christianity as a form of whiteness. So now to talk about this without talking about race is to miss the whole project. And in the same way to talk about this. So I haven't seen his Christian nationalism discussed in most of the press in the same way that I haven't seen his sort of glancing attack on trans kids, the ways in which that is feeding into this. I haven't really seen the anti-Semitism, which was at the heart of his project discussed, which is also a Christian nationalist. There is no anti-Semitism without a kind of Christian nationalism. And in particular, he takes pains to say, I'm not talking about ethnic Jews. He says some ethnic Jews might even be decent people. It is the religion to which I'm opposed. His opposition is religious. The attack on us is religious. Those four gubernatorial candidates I mentioned are all open and explicit Christian nationalists. We can't contend with this unless we're contending on the field of faith. We can't do that, as I think some secular folks want to do, by just saying a pox on all religious houses. It needs to be people of faith as well, speaking up forcefully. And the time for saying, well, let's try and understand them. When you do that, you're still imagining that you're holding the center ground and that you can invite them. You're not holding the center ground anymore. Certainly liberal Christianity is not holding the central ground anymore. We do need to try and understand them, but we also must contend with those ideas and prove those ideas wrong.
Jeff, if you only had one sentence or two, which is all we have, what's next?
I think the clock is ticking closer to what I've been speaking of for a while as a slow civil war, the civil war that I never believed possible, that more and more on the right, and not just the fringe right, but the mainstream right, are speaking of as desirable. I don't think it's in any way inevitable. I think it's still unlikely, but we're moving closer and we need to reverse course now.
Jeff Charlotte is the author of several priceless books on the invasion of our democracy by theocratic forces, titled C Street and the Family, the latter of which was turned into a powerful Netflix series. He's a professor of English at Dartmouth University, where he teaches creative writing. We'll link to his latest Vanity Fair article, The Terrifying Familiarity of the Buffalo Shooting Suspects Extremist Screed from stateofbelief.com. Thank you so much for being with us again today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Wilton.